But I played golf in college, played professionally for 2.5 years, had a bunch of different injuries. Well, the major one was a right shoulder injury. I grew up in Michigan playing hockey and baseball and golf, and it was kind of like a wear and tear injury that just finally reared its ugly head in a golf tournament on the very first tee, actually. And I ended up playing the rest of the golf tournament and realized that it was a major issue. Really got lucky, honestly. I was home for the summer. Went to a PT clinic with a PT that specialized with baseball players, pitchers, and really just fell in love with the whole sports specific corrective exercise, kind of tying in how the rotational forces of the golf swing, all those things really affected my shoulder. And doing sports specific programming, corrective exercise geared towards golf. I just never really done that. We'd had trainers in college, and it was like, they're training the basketball team and then they're training the golf team. We're all doing kind of similar stuff. There's no specific programming based off specific needs. So really fell in love with it then and there. And then, played another year and a half of professional golf. Ended up breaking my wrist on a tree root right before Q school, and was kind of like, man, someone's sending me a sign. This isn't the road for me. And really, it was just kind of like, what do I want to do? And I'd already fallen in love with that whole process. I'd been kind of studying up on it a lot myself, just to kind of make myself a better golfer and a better player. And then I was like, why don't I just give this a shot? Had a trainer in Sea Island, Georgia, named Randy Myers, who I was training with at the time. And he was like, oh, you should totally do this. You'd love it. And then I dove head first, did as much schooling as I could possibly do. I actually graduated college with a business degree originally. Kind of went back, did the whole National Academy of Sports Medicine, did all the TPI training, did a bunch of different corrective exercise certifications and educations. And then got lucky. I was actually training at a place called Fitness by Franck with a trainer named Jeff Franck. He was Vijay Singh's longtime trainer, Jim Furyk, a bunch of guys in this area, this Jacksonville area. And then the PGA Tour Performance Center opened up with Todd Anderson, who was the head of instruction at Sea Island at the time. And we actually didn't know each other, but he knew me a little bit just from when I played. And he liked the idea of hiring someone that could kind of understand the golf swing at a high level, but also had the fitness background, and education. And then just got lucky, and I've been here for almost 9 years now. Kind of worked my way up. Was just working in an 800 square foot room with, a Smith machine and dumbbells. It was kind of like a glorified hotel gym a little bit. And then as the years progressed, we got more and more elite players and good players, and they invested more into it, thankfully. And we started adding, Kaisers and force plates and things that could really help players get better. And then we got lucky enough, we actually just renovated this area that we're in now. This is like 3,200 square feet, and they let me outfit it with everything I wanted and hire a staff. So now we have a PT on staff, we have another trainer on staff, all experts in rotational sports, and it's been great.
So I would think that from your perspective, that's got to be something to, have something go sideways, say your golf career, but then turn into something like, this is where I should be. It's probably got to change your perspective on a lot of things, I would imagine.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I tell guys all the time, it's like when you're in it, and I've been there in it, grinding, trying to do Q school, and right now it's Q school season. So we got guys leaving this weekend actually for second stage, and it's like when you're in it, it's like life or death, and it's just really not the case as much as guys want to think it is. It's like, look, you work hard, every road leads somewhere, and it's like you're not all going to be the number one player in the world, but let's train, let's give you the best shot it can be. But you just never know where it's going to lead, where what relationships are going to lead to what, and it's not to get too deep, but it's why you treat everybody good, and you try not to burn any bridges in this business, for sure. I've been fired many times by tour players that are still friends of mine, and it's like you get fired and it sucks, but it's part of life. It happens.
So you've alluded to it a little bit with Todd Anderson. You have PT on staff, you have other experts. What makes the PGA Tour performance center unique compared to other elite training environments that you've seen?
I mean, I think our knowledge of the golf swing is huge. I mean, there's a lot of elite facilities that I know of in these in the sports world, but not everyone has that in-depth knowledge of the golf swing and how it really affects the body. And like, so I mean, actually, just this hour before, I won't say his name, but he's a great player. He's won many big tournaments. He's coming back from a back injury, and we actually, we've been working with him for about a month and a half. We did all our assessing and everything, but he's back to swinging the golf club. Everything's going well, but I'm like, let's go look at it on our swing catalyst, which shows us our horizontal force, our rotational force, and our vertical force. And it shows us sequencing of those forces in the golf swing. So it's like, I want to make sure that player that there's not something in the golf swing that's directly leading to this injury. And I feel like I'm qualified, obviously, with my background and everything. I'm more qualified than most anyway to see it and be able to diagnose. And you got to have some education from Swing Catalyst and be able to read the graphs and the forces and all that stuff. But being able to look at a guy and be like, hey, look, here's what's happening in the golf swing. You're over rotating a little bit in the golf swing. You're getting a little too much weight going back. You're losing your core. You're getting a little anterior tilted so that when you come through, everything's trying to catch up and you're driving a lot of force down in the right ball of your foot. And when we look at like something like Swing Catalyst, we can see where their max force is happening. So someone like him, we looked at it and we're like, all right, your max torque is happening right here. And this is too late. This is happening too late. So what ends up happening is all that force is driving down into your right side, and he's had, right SI issues, things like that. So we're looking at a direct correlation of a swing pattern that needs to be fixed. We can do all the gym work we want. We can make sure everything's balanced and strong and stable. But if we go out there and then we hit 200 balls with this pattern, it's going to come back eventually. So it's like there needs to be that communication between the swing coach and the gym, the PT. And that's what we try to do here. We just try to make sure everyone is, no matter who their swing coach is, they don't have to work with someone at our facility. A lot of them don't. We work with people with swing coaches all over the world, but it's let's make sure we're on the right page from a swing coach perspective, a trainer's perspective, PT, just so we can make sure the player is heading in the right direction on all fronts.
So when a tour player walks into your facility for the first time, what does an initial assessment look like for them?
Well, yeah, we sit down and we pretty much go through all their history. We if they have, their swing coach with them, we like to hear what the swing coach's perspective is on, like, what happens when things go wrong, what happens when things go right. And then we start to go through an assessment. We have a pretty specific assessment. We definitely take some of those things from TPI, obviously with that background, but we also have a lot of moves that we like to use a dynameter to assess, strength in all different ranges of motions, mid-range, external, full range. So we know, like, a player might have good range of motion when we look at a mobility, but if they don't have good, strength in that range, they're not going to repeat it, or they're going to leave themselves, open for injuries. We do a lot of force plate testing. So we test lower body. We like to look at impulse more than anything else. And we also like to look at, single leg strength. We do a lot of like resisted rotations, measuring that strength as well, just to see if we notice a big imbalance. But we do typical range of motion testing as well. But we like to think we're a little different in the fact that we take a lot of things from the physical therapy world and use it here just to really narrow in on where a player might be struggling when it comes to strength and certain ranges of motion.
So when you're working with a tour player, do you adjust your training based upon whether they're going to be playing in an event upcoming, or they're in it, or how, do you have like an off season kind of, even though there's not that much of an off season? What's the approach with that?
Well, yeah, and that I think that's what you just said is one of the things that is really hard for people that get into this industry is there is no off season for these guys when it comes to them. Even if they don't have a tournament, they're still going out to the range and trying to get better. So you can't really like just absolutely wreck someone with a lower body workout, and then for 3 days they don't get a good day of practice in because they're sore or they're sluggish, whatever it may be. And it's a fine line, helping a player improve strength-wise and not I don't know what the right word is, but not putting it being a detriment to their practice on the range and with their swing coach, because there is such a short off season and they all have things they want to work on when it comes to their swing or they want to get better. So they're out there practicing. I've never had an off season with a guy where he's just like, I have nothing swing wise I want to work on. Let's just hit the gym for a month, whatever it is. But that all comes down to like how we work, the muscle groups, the hypertrophy versus, are we building, what are we trying to do with the player? And it comes down to adjusting volume and things like that. We do a lot of like heavy isometric loads with a lot of lighter explosive things, because we want the player obviously to get more explosive and we don't want them to get injured. But there's ways to work those muscles where they don't feel so fatigued, but they're getting better, they're getting quicker, they're getting more stable. So, but we do have those guys that come in and they got a lot of glaring issues and their hips and glutes are really sore for, a couple of weeks and they got to kind of just work through that.
So let's pivot beyond tour players, which are the elite of the elite. Let's talk more about the average player, which
Yeah.
I'm sure you still work with. Like, what are the differences between the physical movements of tour players versus average players?
Well, I will say the biggest thing is, you're working with one player that is going out and rotating however many, I mean, anywhere from 200 to 500 times a day hitting a golf ball versus an average guy that's, waking up and he's going to work all day and sitting at a desk. And then we're trying to get them to go rotate. So you're always trying to make sure a player can rotate safely and be stable, but a lot of stuff we're doing with tour players is almost making sure their anti-rotation, the lateral stability is really strong so that they can hold up with the amount of times they're rotating versus your average guy, that's working that comes in here at 6 or 7 a.m. and then they're going and sitting at a desk all day and they want to go play golf later that day. We're doing a lot more to open up the hip flexors and make sure the glutes are working properly, make sure the thoracic rotation's good. And a lot of the tour players, like all that stuff is good. We're going to make sure it's balanced, but we want to make sure their body can withstand the amount of times they're rotating versus a guy that we're trying to get maybe rotate a little better. So there is a difference, but I will say, I mean, it is the cool thing about being here is we get, groups of guys coming in at the same time as our normal clients and our juniors. So our juniors are getting a workout next to the tour players and they're going, oh, he's doing the same thing I'm doing, just maybe a little more weight or, and it's like, yeah, that's, it's the same recipe. It's just you guys are at different levels. So it is cool for them to see that.
So this is a bit of an unfair question, but I'll ask it anyway. If
Yeah.
a recreational golfer has only 15 minutes a day, based on your experience, what should they focus on?
Oh man, I mean, I'll say the biggest thing we see with recreational golfers that they just don't have is quality lateral movement and lateral stability. We're very linear people, so we don't move sideways much. So those muscles that are so important to be able to like brace a rotation or like brace a loading pattern and then be able to unload it, those muscles just don't get worked on a day-to-day basis, especially if you're sitting at a desk or whatever, you're traveling a bunch. Either way, you're not moving sideways much, and we're meant to move in all planes, right? So, I mean, the first thing we do with a lot of our amateur players is our dynamic warm up a little bit. We do a lot of like banded glute work, a lot of bands around the sides of the legs, moving sideways, monster walks. We're doing a lot of rotations, hip circles, things like that, where we're making sure they're engaging the right muscles. We do a lot of split stance, like kind of isometric holds with tension to wake up the obliques. And then we usually pair that with rotation. But I mean, the biggest thing guys can benefit from is having that like 15-minute dynamic little warm up focused on different planes of motion, activations, making sure the glutes are working, making sure the obliques are working, and then throwing in kind of like those like lightly resisted rotations to get that feel, make sure everything's stabilizing. That's all our players do something like that where we have bands that they can attach to a golf cart or something. Because we know, like, hey, you're not gonna, if you're leaving work and you want to go hit some balls, we're realistic. You're probably not gonna go to the gym for 45 minutes. Let's make sure you have a 10 to 12 minute warm up that you can do that you're gonna do. You're not gonna be like, oh, there's 15 different moves on this thing. I'm not gonna do it. Let's give you five, that are really important.
So, what's your take on the current? Well, I guess it's not that current. It's been around a little bit, but speed training. What's your take on mid-handicappers working to get, an extra 10 miles an hour? Is it something that you just kind of accept, or are there other factors in there that we should consider?
Oh, I mean, there's so many factors to consider. We've had guys come here that are swinging at 101, 102, and they don't understand. They're like, "Hey, look," and we do their strength testing, and it's really good, and they're fit, and they're just like, "I just don't get it." And then we throw them on swing catalysts, and their sequencing is all out of whack. And it's like, look, the work you're doing in the gym's great. You've gotten stronger, but there's nothing in there that requires you to sequence something properly. So then we start getting them doing like, a chop that requires them to step first and then chop, just anything that creates separation in the front where they're having to pull tension in proper sequencing. And a lot of times if you give someone that's remotely athletic tension and you go, "Hey, you got to move it and you got to get it down to here," they're going to do it in the proper sequencing because it's tension. So they're going to find the fastest way to move that tension. But that's where you take someone like that and you go, "Hey, let's focus more on this stuff. The strength works great, but let's do some medicine ball work. Let's do some rotational chop work where you're having to move tension and work a little more on sequencing." And we've seen people go from literally, we just had a guy in here actually 2 weeks ago. He was swinging at 102, really good athlete, good baseball player back in the day. We literally did some of our like we did some pairing with some heavy med ball into some light med ball. And then we went right back to the range and you started hitting drivers and all that stuff. With the heavy med ball, you have to sequence it. You have to activate properly just to brace that much weight. And then the light med ball just cues the nervous system to move it fast. And we threw a driver in his hand. And he went up there and he was swinging at 112. And not everyone's going to see that big of a jump, but he has that in him, but it just has to be sequenced properly. And we need to do things before the round that focus more on sequencing rather than just lifting weights and getting stronger. But I will say I'm not a huge fan of like the speed sticks. I'm a fan of the science behind it because it's literally what I kind of just said with the heavy to light and you're cueing the nervous system. But what we see is a lot of people overdo the protocol and then they end up getting hurt. They have a lead side injury. No one really thinks about the ball and the ground helping them decelerate the club. But it does. And it's like when all of a sudden you give them a light stick and they're swinging it as hard as they can, and there's nothing there helping them decelerate. If they're not really structurally sound in their fitness and their balance when it comes to their obliques and their glutes and their lats and everything that has to do with lateral stability, they're going to get injured. So we don't do a whole lot of that stuff when it comes to speed sticks. And I'm totally blanking on the other one that was popular that had the different weights and you screwed it on. But we don't do a whole lot of that here. We do a lot with, medicine balls and like going from heavy to light, things like that.
So, two final questions for you, and this is a perfect segue into the next question. What can golfers, say in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and up, do to preserve their club head speed, but also, probably more importantly, to reduce injuries? What are some like key takeaways that guys could or go women golfers could also do?
Yeah, well, I think it goes back to having that 10 to 12 minute warm up and working all planes of motion. Because, like I said, we just get so stuck in that linear plane and we get stuck sitting at a desk. So, I mean, anything you can do, throw a couple bands in the bag and do a dynamic warm up. It's hard to, I mean, there's so much information out there on the internet, obviously, but if you can find someone that's TPI certified and can do a proper assessment and kind of give you the right direction and where you need to go. I feel like a lot of people just go, "Oh, I think this is my problem. I'm going to look up a video about that or whatever." And I mean, I've got a YouTube channel, I've got Instagram. I'm guilty of putting tips out there too that might not help everybody. At least there's information out there, but you need to really know what specifically to you is the problem. And it's like I'm from Michigan. It's tough to find people that are TPI certified and really know what they're doing when it comes to golf. But if you can find one in your area and get assessed and really have a narrowed vision of what you need to work on, you're going to see a lot more improvement than just kind of throwing stuff at the wall and hoping something sticks. But it goes back to that 10 to 12 minute, specific warm up that's going to help you move in all planes, get the right muscles firing. And you can't replace strength work and lifting weights. I mean, there's so many gimmicks and stuff out there, and cardio is great, but we look at some of the number one longevity markers. It's how much muscle mass can you retain throughout your life? And working strength, and you see what it does to your bone density, what it does to your tissue density, tendon density. Like, it's going to keep you healthy. Obviously, if you're doing things in poor form and you're trying to lift too much weight, that's the exact opposite of what I'm trying to get across. But you need to lift weights. You need to be consistent lifting weights, even if it's, not something that feels like it's overly challenging. You're still getting a lot of benefits from it, especially as you age. And that's what we see. The people that, we have guys come in here all the time, and like I said, they want to get more speed, and we see the ones that have kept up with working out in their life, and we've got guys that are 7 years old that have worked out their entire life that see their clubhead speed jump 5 miles an hour after a few months, and it's just because they've kept themselves in such good shape. It's not that big of a shock to their system when we start doing training that's a little more geared to their specific faults. But there's no second best when it just comes to lifting weights.
So, a final question, and this is directly to, I guess, the benefit you have of working with top players in the profession. What's one thing that you've learned the way these players go about doing their business, their job, that you've applied to your own life for your training?
Oh man, that's tough. I mean, the thing I admire most about these guys that people just don't really see the behind the scenes is just the amount of travel these guys have to go through is absurd. I mean, and the schedule takes them all over the world nowadays, and it's like I've got players that play on the European tour, I've got players that play on the PGA tour, I've got players that play on the Latin America tour, Canadian tour. And especially these guys trying to make it, I mean, they are going wherever we'll take them, to try to get them more status or whatever. It's not even about money at that point. It's just they're all losing money essentially, especially the guys that are coming up. And I tell people all the time, you can almost tell as soon as someone comes in, they've just turned pro, they just graduated college. As soon as they come in, I spend an hour with them. I can almost tell if they're going to make it or not because of how much they're really willing to do and committed to doing, because you can't go in just being like, oh, I'm a really good college player, I had a lot of fun, I want to give it a try. It's a very tough lifestyle, and I think if anything, like even when I played, I don't know if I was just totally obsessed with it like some of these guys are. And I just had a guy get his PGA Tour card, Chandler Blanchett is his name. And I mean, me and him have worked together for a while, and he has been through the absolute ringer. He had a bunch of glass in his foot for years. It's kind of a long story, but I mean, the guy won the money list on the Latin America tour with glass in his foot, and he didn't even know he had glass in his foot, in the bottom of his foot. And he had excruciating pain, and he's traveling through South America. He wins the thing there. And I'm like, well, we got to get this figured out. You got to go get an MRI, get it figured out. They end up finding, glass in his foot and in the joints of his toes, and they get it taken out. And then he goes and wins, or he finishes second on the money list here in the Korn Ferry, wins twice, wins the tour championship, gets his PGA Tour card. But like, you have to be so committed. And I think anything in life, like if you want to be, in the top 1% of a profession, or the top 10% even, you just got to be so committed to it. And these guys, and it's like you're gonna have years where it's just a slog and you're just grinding. But if you stick with it, you stay consistent, you know you're doing the right things, like it's gonna pay off eventually. That's something I think, like a lot of these players I've seen that I've gotten the pleasure to work with from maybe late in their college days to their early tour days, and now I see them now. It's like, I mean, Fred Biondi's another guy. He just did a big interview. He just got DP World Tour status. And I mean, he really struggled a couple of years ago. And he was talking about standing on the range, looking at his hands, and he's just full of blood because he's been hitting so many balls, and he couldn't figure out, what was going on in the swing. And it's like he sticks with it, and now he's got full DP World Tour status. He's playing second stage for a Korn Ferry next week. And it's like, man, you just stick with it. You keep your head down. You try to stay as positive as you can, but It's something I admire about these guys. They just stick with it.